Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. The most important election of our lifetime is happening on Tuesday, November 3rd. The battle is on now, with 15 million votes already cast in early voting. Many candidates are running to stand up for we the people. Joe Biden is taking on Trump, and there are many good candidates running up and down the ballot. People have been asking me two major questions about this election. First, which are the most important candidates to support? And second, what do we do if Biden wins and Trump refuses to leave office as he said he will? Our guests today have answers to these important questions. For the first half hour, we'll talk about electing good candidates with Madeline Krakoff of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. For the second half hour, we'll talk with George Lakey of Choose Democracy, a group preparing for the possibility of Trump refusing to leave office if Biden wins. First up is Madeline Krakoff, Red to Bold Program Manager at the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. She has a master's degree from George Washington University and spent the first 6 years of her career in education. She was inspired to take action in the 2020 election and left her job to work with Congressman Jamie Raskin on his Democracy Summer program, teaching young adults to organize and advocate for social issues. She is now the program manager for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee's new Red to Bold program, which just launched yesterday. Madeline Krakoff, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, that's great. So first, for our listeners who aren't familiar with them, what is the Progressive Change Campaign Committee?
Absolutely. So the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, or PCCC, is a million-member grassroots organization building power at the local, state, and federal levels. We engage in electoral work and issue advocacy work. We're really fighting on democracy issues and progressive priorities like expanding Social Security, Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, student debt cancellation, Wall Street reform, things like that.
That's great. Now, you just yesterday, I'm told, launched this new program within the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, and you're calling it Red to Blue, Red to Bold. So can you tell us what is the Red to Bold program?
Yeah, so we launched earlier this week our Red to Bold program, which is a really exciting new program for 7 progressive House candidates that are running in flippable Republican-held seats in areas that can also help Joe Biden win the presidency. So it includes, the slate includes Kara Eastman in Nebraska, Candace Valenzuela in Texas, Dana Balter in New York, Mike Siegel in Texas, Julie Oliver in Texas, John Hoadley in Michigan, and Pam Keith in Florida. So these 7 candidates are running in key states. They're all on the DCCC's red to blue list of competitive seats. And all of them represent opportunities to really expand the Democratic House majority after being upgraded by the Cook Report House ratings in recent weeks.
So, you know, we've got 435 members of the House that are up every 2 years for the U.S. House. How was it that you all decided to pick these 7 House candidates to get behind?
Sure. So the whole program kind of came together because we were talking to Representative Katie Porter, who proved in 2018 that it is possible to flip a red district as a progressive, bold candidate. And she really needs a crew. She needs a team of people who are going to back her up and serve as allies in Congress. And we said, we're going to get her one. And so we looked at the races that are going on and identified these 7 as races that are not only candidates who are moving past the status quo and really want to bring about systemic change in some of these issues that I mentioned earlier, but are also running in districts where it's really key for Joe Biden to win. So it's kind of a 2 birds with 1 stone sort of thing. You get to, you know, really push the presidential race forward, and elect candidates who are going to bring about real change in Congress and back up the progressives that are currently in Congress.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of jaded by politics, and they say, you know, somebody might say they're going to be good when they're running, but then they get into office and they need to raise money, and they kind of go down the path of forgetting about the voters who elected them and looking more at the donors who are backing them. So what do you say to people who are concerned about that?
I would say meet the candidates, learn about them. We had an event earlier this week on Tuesday where all seven candidates in our Red to Bold slate were together for the first time, and hopefully not the last time, in a room or a virtual room, as it were. But and we got to hear their stories, and every single one of them had a personal story that led them here. Whether it was two of these candidates experienced homelessness in the past, many of them had experiences with either themselves or loved ones having serious health issues. Where they saw firsthand the inadequacies of our current healthcare system, and they wanted to do something about it. And I think when you have those personal stories and you are a real person with real goals and have seen that, and you have that empathy, they move forward really continuing to want to change those things. These are candidates who are representative of the American people, and they're going to bring that with them into Congress.
That sounds great. And you're right. You know, Katie Porter is amazing. She's, I know her a little bit. She's a fellow graduate of Yale. So I met her at the Yale Club in DC. She's smart. She's funny. She's tough. She's done amazing work already in the US House. And I understand she does want company. So I'm glad you're working to help Katie Porter get some progressive company in the House. Yeah. That sounds like a great program you had earlier this week. Can some of our listeners who want to see that, is that recorded, or how might we be able to access that?
It is. We have it on our YouTube channel, and we're going to send it out to all of our members later this week. So if you go to boldprogressives.org and sign up for our email list, they will get it through there.
All right. So that's it. Go to boldprogressives.org on the web and sign up. And I've been tracking Adam Green and the Progressive Change Campaign Committee from pretty much when it first started, and it's impressive what the group has built up and just steadily building to have progressive candidates run and win all over the country in federal seats as well as in some of the local seats as well, and state legislatures, which are also important. So are you doing anything with the state legislators in this election cycle, or are you focusing pretty much on the federal races?
So we have a number of programs that support candidates up and down the ballot. So just this cycle, we've actually raised almost $1.4 million for candidates. And over the course of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, we've raised over $31 million for progressive candidates and committees over the last decade. So we have a number of programs like that. We're doing polling to see how we can make sure that we're getting out the vote, up and down the ballot. We have training programs that are often attended by future candidates who want to run from everything from the school board to Congress to Senate. So if you're considering running, we highly encourage you to check those out also on our website. But we are certainly focused on the whole ballot. This Red to Bold program in particular is focused on these progressive House candidates, but some of our other programs do support up and down the ballot.
Yeah, that's great. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should tell our listeners that, you know, I've been a supporter of a Progressive Change Campaign Committee and I've donated money. You know, it's those $5 by all of us really add up, and it's what's powering a lot of candidates now. A lot of Democratic candidates that people thought didn't really have a chance are actually highly competitive. And I've been tracking a lot of the Senate races where places you would never dream a Democrat would win, like even in Kansas and Texas with MJ Hager, and Georgia has got two good Democratic candidates that are very competitive. in this cycle. So I think you're hitting the right place at the right time where voters are kind of fed up with Trump and the Republicans and the crazy chaos and the tax breaks to the very wealthy. And it's time to get people into our federal and state offices who really want to represent we the people and fight for the common good. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first, thank you for your support. we really appreciate it. But yeah, absolutely. We've seen tremendous support for this and our other programs. I mean, just in the first day of launching this Rent to Bold program, we raised over $30,000. We had thousands of donations. Right. And I think people really, really want to see change and they want to see progressives in office. One of our candidates is in Nebraska, Kara Eastman. And her race has been identified as one that could be really crucial in the presidential race as well. So these are places, Texas, we have three candidates in Texas. So places that weren't necessarily a place that you would dream of, you know, having progressives run and you know, be really successful, but we found that they are. And these are really close races, and the more support we can give them, the better. In what can only be described as a crazy year with a lot of news going on, both in the presidential race and just other things happening in the world. I think even the most politically engaged people who are really paying attention to the news, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners are, it can be easy to just be completely lost on where to go and where to support. And we wanted to make it as easy as possible for somebody to just say, I'm going to go to rentable.org and donate there and know that their money and their contributions are going directly to progressive candidates who share their values.
Right. I think it's a fantastic model. And I love, you know, so much of what fundraising had become in politics, particularly on the federal level, was all about chasing the big donors. And that's where even some Democrats kind of got sucked into the money hole and beholden to wealthy people to be able to hold on to their seats. But the model that you're doing with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee rallies, you know, we the people with our $5 and $10, just enough of us get together, and we're really putting wind under the wings of some of these candidates and making them viable. So it's very exciting to see, and I appreciate the work you're doing to help people know, like, which are the key ones to focus on where my $5 or $25 is really going to make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have over 1 million members, so even just a couple dollars from each of them makes a huge difference. When our candidates had joined us the other day, we asked them, you know, what does this money do for you? And obviously the races are a little bit different in each of their districts. You know, Texas is very different than upstate New York. But in each of these, they said that just a little bit can go a long way. In Dana Balter's district, for example, who is in an incredibly tight race and has a great shot of winning, she said that just $1,000 can buy them a 30-second media buy at 5:30, which is when a ton of people are watching. So just a few donations can sway a ton of votes. And we, again, wanted to make it as easy as possible for people to know where their money was going and know what difference they were making.
Right, that's great. So for our listeners who are interested in checking it out and maybe supporting some of these places where your $5 or $10 is going to make a difference, go to boldprogressives.org and check out the candidates that are there. And you've got a slate of House candidates, and you've got a slate of the Senate candidates, which are also important. And you've done all that work to say, okay, here's your top 7 in the House and your top 10 in the Senate, and back them.
Exactly. Yeah. All of the candidates that we support are on boldprogressives.org. And then if you go to redtobold.com or redtobold.org, either one, it'll take you to a list of our Red to Bold candidates with descriptions, and then you can donate right there on the page.
Yeah, that's great. Well, talk a little bit. You mentioned about these 7 candidates, and you add them all together. And I know you're fairly new on this job, right? I mean, it's a new project. So Talk to us a little bit about a couple of the candidates. You mentioned three in Texas. Now, I've been thinking, and some political donors have asked me, they asked me, where should I send some money, where my money will make a difference? And, it's important to make it simple for people and make it easy. But one of the races I've put high on my list is the Senate race in Texas for MJ Hager, who's running for the U.S. Senate. And people thought, oh, Republican Texas, it's been Republican for so long, and, not a prayer for her to win. But the polls are showing Democrat MJ Hager neck and neck with the Republican senator. So she's got a real shot at winning that race. And if she can bring people out for that Senate race, then those people will likely vote for Joe Biden. And if Joe Biden can win Texas, we're going to know on election night who wins Texas, because they allow people to count the vote-in ballots even before November 3rd election day. So we should know election night who wins Texas. And if Texas goes Democrat for Joe Biden, game over. There's no way that Trump is going to win. And I myself think it's critical that we know on election night that Biden wins and not Trump, to prevent the chaos and the claims by Trump to say, oh, well, it's fraudulent and we're not going to wait for those fraudulent mail-in ballots. I'm the victor, so everybody support me, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's more important than ever that we have a landslide victory and that there is no question that Joe Biden wins this election. And Texas could very well end up being a crucial state. And we have, like I said, three candidates from Texas, all of whom are in really tight races and have incredible things to say. Candace Valenzuela, who's running in Texas, Texas 24th District, is in one of the most flippable races in the country. Her polling has her up by 7 points.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, she's been endorsed by Elizabeth Warren. She's on the red to blue list. She's campaigning on a Green New Deal, improving public schools, expanding family leave. She's got an incredible platform and is a really impressive candidate. We also have Mike Siegel, who ran in 2018 and came within 4 points of defeating Michael McCaul. Now he's back and it's a 2-point race. He was recently added to the red to blue list for the DCCC. And again, all of these are close races. Julie Oliver, also Texas 25, is only trailing her Republican opponent by about 2 points in a swing district. She's also been endorsed by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and is on the red to blue list. So these are some incredible candidates that have a real shot. If we can get out support for them, if we can, get people paying attention and willing to donate. So,
right.
Rentable.org.
I'd put those three House candidates in Texas at the top of my list for who do we back for the U.S. House. I mean, along with Katie Porter, of course, we have to protect her and make sure she can win again. Orange County in California is not an easy place to win as a Democrat, but she's done it. I would say those three Texas seats are vital. And you mentioned also a candidate in Nebraska. And I know, people think, Nebraska, really? Can we win there? So, what's with the bold progressive candidate running for the U.S. House in Nebraska?
Sure. So in the Nebraska 2nd District, we have Kari Eastman. So she is one of the top House candidates in the nation. She also ran in 2018 and came within 1 point of defeating John Bacon, her Republican opponent, who's the current incumbent. Right now, she's 2 points up, and she has a real shot of winning this. Obama actually won a Nebraska electoral vote when in his election, so it's definitely possible, and it was this district. So that's certainly one to watch. It's been named multiple times as the district that could be key and really potentially change the course of the election for Joe Biden.
Fantastic. And how sweet it would be to win there.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to be a progressive from Nebraska?
Right, exactly. And upstate New York, who's running there?
Sure. So in upstate New York, we've got Dana Balter. So she's running against Republican opponent John Katko. So he's actually one of just three House Republicans left in districts that Hillary Clinton won. So she's in an extremely close race. I think she was just changed from upgraded from Leans Republican to toss up. So the more money and the more support that we can throw to her, the better. She was the one who was telling us that just $1,000 can get her a media buy in New York. So she can certainly use the support, but she's fighting for a very progressive platform, including Medicare for All, Green New Deal. She wants to take on big money in politics, universal pre-K, higher wages for workers, a really, really impressive candidate overall.
That's great. And do these candidates have to kind of sign on to the bold progressive agenda to be able to be endorsed, or is that a factor in your selections?
We've been working pretty closely with them, but we identified them based on their platforms. So they're all running progressive platforms and share a lot of our values. And, you know, we wanted to identify candidates who were going to be really strong allies for Katie Porter when they get to Congress. And hopefully all seven of them will be together in January.
Right. Wonderful. And they can join some of the progressives that are already there. You know, also get Jamie Raskin, and we got Jim McGovern from Massachusetts. So we got some progressive there. We just need more of them to get more of a critical mass and more votes and more strength.
We do. So we've getting a lot of support from the CPC and other progressive members of Congress also. Part of this Rent to Bold program is actually we're matching up members of Congress with these candidates to kick off phone banks in their districts. And so we've seen a lot of support there and a lot of participation in getting these candidates elected.
That's great. So we got three in Texas, one in Nebraska, and one in upstate New York. What about the other two?
Yeah, so we have John Hoadley in Michigan, who's in a neck and neck race against Fred Upton, who is really one of the worst enemies of the environment in Congress. Again, John is on the red to blue list, endorsed by Elizabeth Warren. If he was elected, he would actually become the first openly gay member of the Michigan congressional delegation. So he's got an incredible story. He talks pretty openly about his partner, who was diagnosed with a chronic, pretty serious disease, and their struggles with insurance and making sure that the prescriptions that he needs, which would have cost well over $7,000 otherwise, making sure that families can afford the medicines that they need. So he's campaigning on that, as well as expanding Social Security, Green New Deal, and a variety of other bold progressive ideas.
That's great. And then your seventh candidate would be who?
Our seventh candidate is Pam Keith in Florida 18, which is right above West Palm Beach. So she is a veteran who is running to defeat Republican incumbent Brian Mast. She's trailing him by single digits in what is a toss-up race, excuse me. Again, she's running on a platform that includes Medicare for All, opposition to fracking, student loan forgiveness. She is also running against another candidate who is a openly QAnon supporter.
Let's knock him out.
Yeah. So we would love to see him not win.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope they all win. And so what are some of the specific things you're doing? You're helping them raise money. Is that the big thing? And what are there other ways you support these bold progressive candidates?
Yeah, so there are a couple ways. First, of course, is fundraising, which we're doing through our rentable.com website and a lot of social media. We've had a ton of support with that from everyone from celebrities, from Kerry Washington to Edward Norton, Rosie O'Donnell, Mark Ruffalo, who called them the Progvengers, since he's the Hulk. Probably not the next Marvel movie, but a great endorsement nonetheless.
Celebrities count. I was just on a call the other night with the cast from Star Trek. Was there in support of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and it was really fun.
Yeah, it's been incredible to see the creative like initiatives that people are coming up with, from that to the Princess Bride to little, I think there's a West Wing thing coming up, like all kinds of fundraising. People are getting really creative in these strange times, and it's very cool to see.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but we're doing this fundraising through our rentable.com, but we're also doing, I think I started to mention, these phone banks where we're pairing up current members of Congress and other progressive icons with these candidates to do kickoffs and really drive volunteers to their phone banks, because the more phone calls we can make for these candidates, the better. Mm-hmm. And so we're supporting them that way. And then we're also doing a number of events. We did this event the other day with all seven, and then mm-hmm. we haven't announced it yet, but we have an exciting event coming up next week that you'll hear more about if you follow our social media and our emails when we announce it later this week.
Fantastic. And I'm wondering, on a personal level, Madeline, you were on your track, you had your master's, you had 6 years on your career path in education. What motivated you to leave that this year to do progressive election work?
Yeah, it was certainly a big change for me. But I felt like the country was at a turning point, and I didn't want to sit back and not do anything. I felt like I had skills that I could contribute, and wanted to find the best way that I could do that. And so I ended up working with Congressman Raskin on his Democracy Summer project. I had experiences working with, most of my experience had been working with college students. And so I got to jump right in, and it was one of the most fulfilling, inspiring experiences I've ever been a part of, seeing these young adults who are just so enthusiastic and so excited, many of whom couldn't even vote yet, but still want to be a part of it. And I really haven't looked back since. So I'm looking forward to putting in more work over the next couple of weeks and after, to make sure that these changes actually happen.
That's great. Good for you. And can you just say, like, what do you think progressives can achieve by voting in this election? Some people think it's a waste of time to vote. What do you think we can achieve?
Yeah, I mean, first I'll say it is not a waste of time to vote. Please vote. The number one thing progressives can do, anyone can do in this election, is vote. If you can vote early, vote early. As Joe Biden said, if you can vote in person, vote in person. But I think we can achieve real change. We can get Joe Biden elected. He's got his Build Back Better plan. And that's what our bold progressives want to do. You know, they don't just want to bring us back to where we were. They want to bring us forward. And I think we can achieve real change when it comes to these progressive ideas and bold ideas like Medicare for All and, debt-free college. But the only way that we can do that is to vote, to donate, to call your friends and family and make sure that they're voting and really get involved.
That's great. Well, that's all the time we have. Madeline Krekov of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, thanks so much for your great work and for being with us today. Good luck.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to be here.
Our next guest is George Lakey, professor at Swarthmore College and lifelong activist for peace and human rights. Professor Lakey recently published a book titled How We Win, A Guide for Achieving Real Progressive Change, written for protesters, activists, and community builders. He's currently working with a group called Choose Democracy, making plans on what to do if Biden wins and Trump refuses to leave office. George Lakey, welcome back to All Together Now.
So happy to be back. And I noticed that we have bookends today of a youth and an old guy.
Everybody's welcome to this party. America's showing up. So if you have a visual, you're welcome to come on screen now. But if not, we'll happy to settle for your mellifluous voice.
Here
there
I
we
am.
Go. Nice to see you again, George. So tell us about this new group, Choose Democracy. Why was the group formed and what is it doing?
Well, in July, I first started publishing articles about the possibility that Trump might not go just because we don't want him to stay. So there I was beating the drum, right? Feeling a little lonely. And then some of my friends and their friends said, well, let's create a group, and let's create a group that won't be trying to organize a movement, because that's a big national picture. And there are a bunch of national organizations, progressive national organizations, that can take the leadership. But what they'll need is not only a little pushing, but also providing some resources. For example, training. Training is a good thing to start early, right? And also providing evidence-based information. So let's create a website where we can create, where we can give people an avenue to find out, well, what have people done in other countries where there's been a power grab, you know, kind of coup d'etat. How about what we can learn from them? That'd be a good thing. And how can we find each other and so on? So we've created that kind of website, the Choose Democracy website. And one of my favorite things about it is that we include a pledge of resistance. And you would remember the 80s, 1980s. What? I'm not sure that your previous guest would remember, but in the 1980s, we had a threat of an outrageous possible war that Ronald Reagan was about to foist on us, a war against Nicaragua, because Nicaragua had the nerve to want to leave the American empire. And of course, And the president's job is to manage the American empire, not to allow anybody to leave. And so he did all kinds of sanctions and dirty tricks, and finally put troops, American troops, in a neighboring Honduras, poised to invade Nicaragua. It would have created another Vietnam. It would have been an outrageous thing for the people of Nicaragua and for us and for everyone. And we stopped that. And one way we stopped it, one deterrence factor, was so many people signed a pledge of resistance that basically was a threat. It was saying, if you do that, then we will go all out in committing civil disobedience, nonviolent disruption of all kinds. We'll stop the country if necessary in order to stop you in your tracks. And that was one of the factors that succeeded. So I'm one of these people who believes it's really better to deter something horrible than to have to clean up afterward. And if we could deter Donald Trump from doing this power grab by showing him, and now tens of thousands of people are signing this pledge, by showing him, look, you're in for a bigger fight than you actually want. And maybe there are calmer heads around him who would persuade him of that, if we can show it. And so on our website, people can go and sign on to the Pledge of Resistance. And it's a pledge for democracy, of course, in this context. And then take the training and form groups and be ready to go in case he makes that bad move.
Right, exactly. Well, I should have known you were behind this. It was such a great idea. And it's so wonderfully done. For our listeners, you might please go check it out. The website is choosedemocracy.us. And you'll find what Professor Lake is talking about there, about you can sign up for the training and get some incredible information, which we're going to talk a little bit more about, but also this pledge. And I'd like to read you the pledge right now, because it's very simple, very straightforward, but I think possibly very important. So here's the pledge from Choose Democracy. It says, number one, we will vote. See, right away, you give away what a radical group you are. We will vote. Number two, we will refuse to accept election results until all the votes are counted. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And number three, we will non-violently take to the streets if a coup is attempted. And number four, if we need to, we'll shut down this country to protect the integrity of the democratic process. Now, virtually every American I know would be willing to back this pledge. What practical value do you have in mind for people signing it?
Well, even signing it is really important. tens of thousands become hundreds of thousands, right? If we're all telling our relatives and friends, neighbors, and so on. And if it's hundreds of thousands who are signing this, politicians who, after all, at least the more evidence-based politicians, so I won't include Trump himself, but other people around him will be looking at that as a barometer of how much of a fight would we be, you know, what would we be bargaining for if we were to back him in wanting to do this? And my guess is the bigger the threat from our side, the less likely it is they are to go through with it. And then, of course, another cool thing about signing the pledge, like I remember signing the pledge in the 80s with regard to invasion of Nicaragua, and it definitely stiffened my own back, if you know what I mean. There's something a bit solemn, and well, then it becomes a question of integrity. Will I follow through? So hundreds of thousands of us signing this, it matters for us. And I think it's an additional impetus, which we might need because COVID is an issue. Mm-hmm. We'll want to act in ways, you know, as you read that, I was remembering it says, take to the streets. We don't mean that literally. We don't mean get up into your neighbor's face and catch COVID from them. What we mean is do whatever tactics make sense, including what makes sense in terms of we're in a pandemic situation, but do a variety of tactics that refuse to cooperate with the a possible power grab, and that really lean on, especially the center, the political center, mm-hmm. which is going to have a big, big influence on how this whole thing turns out.
I think that's exactly right. And everything that I've read about these attempted power grabs, it's there's this moment when the dictator kind of assumes the power, and it's kind of shocking to a lot of people. That's why I think it's important to talk about it ahead of time. It's not like we're saying this will happen, but it may happen. And it's vital that we think about it and plan and prepare ahead of time, because if it does happen, we're all going to need to not be sitting back in shock going, what's happening? We need to be taking action right away to defend our democracy. So I think you're exactly right. And I come from New England, so we believe an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
I'm with you.
Yeah. And along those lines, one of the wonderful things on your wonderful website, choosedemocracy.us, is this great essay called 10 Things You Need to Know to Stop a Coup. And I thought it was great. It was kind of like, you know, I'm a woman and a lot of women like to go, a lot of men too, but like to go, here's our recipe. And it felt to me like these 10 things
on is a recipe.
How you stop it is a recipe for stopping a coup.
That's
so,
right.
I don't know.
It's evidence-based, you know, it's not just theory or speculation, because
right.
What went into those 10 steps, I'm close friends with the guy who wrote that, Daniel Hunter, and what went into that recipe is research into how were other people in other countries successful in defeating a coup. And there are quite a number of cases now in which people successfully defeated a coup attempt through mass nonviolent action. So, hey, why not learn from success and do it ourselves?
Exactly. Well, as you may recall, that's my theme song is Let's Build on What Works. I spent 20 years going around the U.S. looking for the successful models and education and criminal rehabilitation and helping kids with autism. It's like, let's take these successful models and learn from them and build on them. And that's what you all have done here with stopping a coup. So not that you need to have memorized it, but if you could share with our listeners, like, what are some of the key things that we should know, like how do we stop a coup? What are some of those 10 things?
Fortunately, a political scientist named Stephen Zunis, also happily a friend of mine, actually he was a student of mine long ago, proud to say.
You teach them well.
But Stephen Zunis went ahead and researched 12 cases in which there was mass resistance to a coup attempt, so 12 different countries. And he noticed that 8 of them were successful. That is, the people won and the coup plotters lost. So naturally, he asked himself, well, What's the evidence say about what the secrets to success were of those eight that won? Mm-hmm. And so in his study, which you can find through our website, you'll find the four keys that really make the difference. The first key is widespread participation. That is, it doesn't pay just to have, for example, a few notable people, some authors or Hollywood stars or something, say, no, 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 bad, bad, bad. No, it really needs widespread participation. And a good example of that is in Thailand in 1992, when the military tried a coup, mm-hmm. and the people went into resistance mode, nonviolent resistance, but they didn't have a whole lot of people out. And so they weren't able to tip the difference for a little while. They went on weeks and weeks and still weren't able to win. And the military got tired of just beating people up and jailing them, and thought, we need heavier repression to stop this movement. So they actually, the generals told the soldiers to just fire into the crowds of nonviolent demonstrators. I know. Wow. Killing a bunch of them was a massacre. And the response to that on the part of the larger population was, this we will not tolerate. And they jumped into the movement, expanding the movement hugely, and that overthrew the military and supported the civilian government to persist. So we know that wider participation is way, way better than smaller participation. Then another key that Stephen came up with was noticing that alliance building showed up in every single one of those eight cases. Now, my favorite case of alliance building is from Germany in 1920, when they faced a coup. And one reason why I like that case is because Germany in 1920 was highly polarized. Now, I'm sure that your listeners are very aware of what a destructive thing polarization is, political polarization, right? Mm-hmm. It's very, very tough, very hard on us. Well, Germany, believe it or not, was more polarized than the United States is right now. And 1920 was a nightmare of polarization. The government was being held by a party that represented the center. On the left were the socialists and the communists, who were always fighting each other. And then on the right was a right wing that was getting discontented with the situation. And so the right wing decided, let's just do a coup. Let's hook up with the military and do a coup, forget all this democratic nonsense, and we will run an efficient government, right? So a guy named Wolfgang Kopp was the leader of the right-wing politicians, and he said, okay, I will lead the government, and he lined up some generals. And so first day of declared coup. This is crucial. Over the weekend, because they did it on Friday, so often nasty things are done on Friday. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
and so on Friday, they did this coup, right? So over the weekend, the communists and socialists, who are so, were so used to bickering, united to oppose the coup. And reached out. Yeah. And they reached out to the center party and said, we see you are in big doo-doo, and we are ready to join you in a united opposition. And the labor movement went on strike, declared general strike, which was not to be a strike forever, but, you know, to be like a week or two week kind of strike. And then so over the weekend, they pulled this alliance together. On Monday morning, Wolfgang Kopp goes to the Capitol building, ready to assume command of the country, right? He's going to be the dictator, right? He walks into the building and there's nobody there. The place is deserted because all the government workers went on strike.
So he can't
write his manifesto because he doesn't know how to type. So the next day he brings his daughter to work so that she will type the manifesto that says he's running the country. Running what country? Still nobody in the building, right?
That's in there, and also resistance and non-cooperation is so powerful.
So powerful. You can't run a government. The Trump family cannot run a government by itself. It can't run a country by itself. It needs the cooperation of a zillion people, and we can withdraw that cooperation anytime we want.
Excellent. So those are the keys.
Those are the two of the four. We can go into more if you want, but that gives you an indication of how much we can learn from other countries.
Well, yeah, just to hit the highlights, we get widespread participation. We have alliance building. What are the other two?
The other two, the third one seems to be to do your actions on pretty as much as you can nonviolently. That seems mm-hmm. to really pay off. Because if you try to do it through armed struggle, if you try knowing the soldiers are coming or knowing the right wing is coming or the militias are coming, if you try to bring guns and try to outgun them, you're actually setting up just a law and order situation. And you're likely to lose. The soldiers be brought out, whatever. So what really seems to pay off is a pretty strong nonviolent discipline. Now, I know that that's a matter of controversy on the left these days, mm-hmm. especially in light of Black Lives Movement. And mm-hmm. when I run into somebody who says, George, that's controversial these days, I just say, look, whatever your theory of change is with regard to making change and achieving racial justice or whatever, if you see a role in violence, for violence in that, you're entitled to your opinion. This thing that we're facing in the fall is different. This is not a social change situation. This is a defending the coup against a coup situation, and that has different rules. It's a different ball game. It's like the difference between football and baseball. It's really a different game. And you don't want to, if you're suddenly playing baseball, but you've been excellent at football, you don't really want to go out and tackle the pitcher of the opposing side, right? You don't want to do that because you're playing a different game. So mm-hmm. whatever you think about violence, nonviolence question with regard to stopping a coup, it's very clear from the research that Stephen has done that the more nonviolence, the better. And then the fourth key that Stephen found was the importance of being unequivocal in saying no to the people who are trying to get away with it. That is not to compromise, not to temporize. And that has been tried again and again and failed because the dictator ends up grabbing all the power, right? Mm-hmm. The would-be dictator. Mm-hmm. So what seems to pay off big time is to stiffen the backs of the politicians. And I mean, we have to remember Al Gore did compromise, right? And how awful over the Florida vote. What mm-hmm. a big mistake. But it's also understandable because Democrats, like Republicans, get to be who they are if they're high up elected officials by their cleverness at deal making. Deal making is their skill set. Negotiation, what they do. That's what they do every day. And so it's natural in a way for them when they face a big challenge. Oh, well, let's negotiate our way out of that. That's a kind of go-to for them. That's not our go-to. We want principled refusal to cooperate with any kind of deal that the Trump administration might want to make. And so we have to stiffen the backs of Democrats, of independents, of everybody we know, and say absolutely no cooperation with an illegitimate authority.
Right. That's fascinating. I so appreciate you sharing that very important research on what works to stop a coup. As you know, I've had a lifelong commitment to nonviolence and strongly believe in the power of it. I've been having conversations with friends who are concerned, as we're talking about, if Trump refuses to leave after it's clear Biden has won, then we go in the streets to defend our democracy. We know that Trump's supporters are out there, the paramilitary. They just had plots to kidnap and possibly kill the governor of Michigan and the governor of, Virginia. So we know these guys are going to be out there with guns. That's and right. Our side is generally nonviolent and not having guns. And my friends are worried. They say, Eleanor, you're asking me to get ready to go to the streets, but we're going to run into these guys with guns. You know, we could just get mowed down. So how do we protect ourselves? What do you say to that?
It's a great question. And I hear it all the time. We've been having these trainings. Thousands of people now have been coming to these Choose Democracy trainings. And that's on everybody's mind, and understandably. And it's on my mind. So there's a number of resources that we can use that will support us. Number one, we can be tactically flexible and use tactics that minimize the likelihood of that kind of encounter. For example, if you just go where you ordinarily go, the federal building or wherever, in a big mass of people, in a way you're putting out catnip for the cats, right? I mean, it's almost an invitation, come rumble.
You're making an easy target.
Exactly. So let's not do that. Let's use other tactics. If, for example, you're going after elected officials to get them to stand up for themselves and stand up for democracy, then do caravans past their houses. Go create demonstrations at their church or mosque or synagogue, wherever they worship. Meet them in the country club, right? I mean, go in small groups. Catch them in their office, do sit-ins, whatever. There's lots of civil disobedience possibilities that you can do in ways that don't basically draw a target on your back. So we're inviting people to investigate the wonderful big world of nonviolent tactics. And then another thing you can do is you can, when there are demonstrations that are carefully organized, you can build peacekeeping into them, such that you have experienced people who know how to de-escalate tense situations. Because a lot of folks, if they're new to this kind of thing, when they see a threat, their energy rises, right? The heart beats faster. Mine does.
Right.
You know, and then there's a tendency to escalate our own thing. They're yelling at us, we start yelling back, blah, blah, blah. And next thing you know, boom, you know, something goes off. Mm. So what we need is people who are designated marshals. Very often they wear armbands or special t-shirts, whatever, hats, particular hat, cap, and they're looking out for each other and for us and building in safety in the way we behave. Because it turns out that even in a situation where we're being menaced by violent people, and I've been beaten up, I've been around for a long time, so I've been beaten up multiple times. And so I've learned something through experience about handling myself. And I know that we do have more power than we give ourselves credit for in being able to handle situations like that. And we can turn to experienced people. We can also go to training. So on Choose Democracy website, choosedemocracy.us, you'll find trainings advertised that people can just go to by Zoom and get additional training in peacekeeping. So that's a big help too.
Yeah, that's great. Well, just so you know, I signed up for one of your trainings. I live here in Washington, D.C., so I'm assuming we're going to have people in the streets here. And I'm very committed to nonviolence, and I want to be successful and alive at the end of it. So I can't wait for the training to learn how to do that. And, I talked to a friend actually yesterday who took the training already and really was so grateful for it. So thank you for doing those trainings. She was saying she thought it would be helpful if we could do a grid that said, if they do this, then we do that, and these are the groups to go to about it. So, you know, do you know, or could you create such a grid that just so ahead of time we know we haven't mapped out some of those specific tactics we might want to follow and which groups to turn to?
I don't know of a general way of doing it. However, for a particular demonstration or a particular tactic, it is possible to create that kind of grid, but it needs to be very particular because it's very situational.
Right.
Very situational, yeah. But just today is published on a place where I'm a columnist, it's an online publication called wagingnonviolence.org. And your listeners on wagingnonviolence.org will find an article by me that describes a whole lot of different situations, which helps us figure out, oh, well, in that kind of situation, it looks like that works. In that kind of situation, it looks like that works. So that they can, in a sense, do more mapping of the kind you're talking about, trying to figure out, okay, well, now in this situation that my friends are saying they want me to come down to, I can see I plug in that approach, and that's more likely to keep me safe. Do you know what I mean? But it is a little more complicated than a one grid situation would allow for.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I really appreciate you pulling together this very vital information. Myself, I was like resist. I know Trump was saying, I'm not going to leave, but I found it so hard to believe that that could actually happen in the United States. But as I've seen things evolve, so much has happened in the past 4 years we thought would never happen. So I'm just saying to people, be prepared. We don't want it to happen, but if it does happen, we need to be prepared. So I encourage our listeners to go to choosedemocracy.us and read the pledge, sign up for that, sign up for the training, read our 10 ways to stop a coup, and let's be ready on November 3rd. Okay, that's all the time we have. George Lakey, thank you so much for being with us again, and thank you for all your great work.
You know what I've noticed about you, Eleanor? You have about the fastest half hour on radio.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
When talking with you, the time goes really fast.
Thanks so much, George. Great to see you and good luck.
Likewise.
See you in the streets.
Really fun to be with you. Thanks.